right. It's a pleasure to have you back with us for another GoldSeek.com Radio Gold Nugget segment. Today's special guest, Andy Hoffman from Miles Franklin. Well, most investors have heard of peak oil. My next guest is a market analyst who says that the world could soon be facing peak silver. Joining me in his debut appearance to discuss the precious metals market, welcome Andy Hoffman.
Oh, thank you, Chris. Miles Franklin Precious Metals. We're a bullion dealer. And after all these years of listening to you, it's a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, let's begin, if we could, with the idea of silver extinction. Currently, silver is widely extant, but you note that it could be the first element to go the way of the dinosaurs. You show the historic gold-to-silver production ratio, roughly 16 to 1, has declined to as low as 9 to 1. And I think this is, you know, really quite an interesting finding, given the advances that we've had in recent decades in mining technology. You say this is due to the fact that silver is primarily the result of base metal production. Care to pick up the ball and tell folks more, please?
Yes, if you're referring peak silver per se, it relates to the fact that, as you said, the gold-silver ratio out of the earth, or should I say the silver-to-gold ratio, has historically been 15 to 16 to 1. But in recent decades, it's fallen to 9 to 1 because silver production has depleted more rapidly than gold production. And moreover, 70% of all the world's silver production is byproduct from base metals. And now that we're in a weak economic environment, the outlook for a lot of major new base metal mines is not very good. Moreover, from the standpoint of the cost of mining primary silver, it's anywhere between $22 and $30 per ounce. So right now, we are way below the cost of production for the average silver mine around the world. And, you know, with the prices being held down here so low, the odds are we're going to see production fall significantly in the coming years. Moreover, unlike gold, where just about all the gold that's ever been mined is still above ground, nearly all the silver has been consumed by industry. So there's really no more than maybe 2 billion ounces above ground in the entire world, most of which is sitting in vaults of people that are never getting rid of it.
You know, there's another little known fact about silver. Unlike gold, silver tends to pool in its deposits, that is, near the Earth's surface. Silver has essentially accumulated near the Earth's crust. That would make one assume that, well, maybe much of it has already been mined.
Well, I'm no geologist, although I did work in the mining industry for 5 years and did my best to work with the lingo. But the fact is, in the same way you talk about the gold rush of 1849 and all the other famous gold rushes, or for that matter, any commodity rush, like when they find oil, then it becomes significantly more expensive and difficult to mine in subsequent years, which is why you're seeing the cost of many commodities. I was an oil analyst for 10 years, and the cost of producing oil has dramatically increased because they've gotten all the simple stuff, and now they have to go to deep water and offshore and to very difficult places around the world. And the same thing goes with mining, where just the permitting process alone is extremely expensive, let alone the heap leaching and all the chemicals and processing and transportation. So if that is the case, that the average silver find has been much closer to the surface of the earth, the odds are, as you said, it's probably been mined already.
You also show that virtually all of the silver mined is used by industry purposes, and I'm sure many of our listeners by now know that everything from cell phones to computer keyboards, even the smallest electronic product, uses incremental tiny amounts of silver. It is the world's best electrical conductor. Very few people, I think, know this. Most people assume that it's gold. It's not. Silver, by far, a better conductor, the most reflective of metals. It's only second to gold in malleability and ductility. Quite a unique quality, I think you'd agree, for a monetary metal.
Silver, as you said, has these indispensable qualities about it that make it very difficult to substitute, especially because it's such a reasonable price right now. And if you look at the things that it's being used for, and I'm not even talking about cell phones, I'm talking about, things like medical and, those kind of things, the new solar panels, all these things, these are indispensable businesses. And as you said, they're very small amounts, generally speaking, in all these things. So not only does the price not matter that much, but they don't tend to be recycled in large quantities. So, from a fundamental standpoint, simply from demand, in which roughly 75% of all the supply is taken up by industry in any given year, there's really not that much out there for people to invest in. And given there's not much inventory to start with, it shows you how tight this market already is and what it could become. Look, remember, we've had numerous shortages of silver just in the last 5 years. In 2008, of course, where we had premiums go to 100%. In 2011, silver went to $50. We ran out of silver. Earlier this year, not once, but twice. First in January, where the mint sold out, and it's been a record year. And then again in April, after the cartel smashed the price down, we ran out of silver again temporarily. So it's a very tight market, and it wouldn't take much for it to really explode on the upside.
Well, you brought up one of our favorite industries, and that, of course, the solar sector, red hot for most of the year, up at one point as a sector by roughly 1,000%, depending on which index you look at. And one of our favorite picks, First Solar, they're up over 100% since we first offered that on the Alpha Stocks newsletter. Silver is an essential component in solar panels, and according to one source, as much as an ounce of silver per solar panel. I'd also like to discuss investment grade silver is really quite rare. I think few people realize that there's less than 1/10 an ounce of silver available to every global inhabitant. So in other words, if we took all the available silver, you couldn't essentially even give a dime to every person on the earth. That would seem to indicate that picking up silver at discounted prices at these levels could pay off. Any comments?
I mean, when you talk about silver, again, yes, there's probably 2 billion ounces above ground to start with. And I've gone over the numbers with David Morgan and with numerous other people. I mean, that's probably the max that's out there. And I'm not talking about the stuff that's sitting in relics, in artifacts in churches and stuff like that. I'm talking about actual above-ground investment-grade silver is probably no more than 2 billion ounces. But that's most of that, as I said, is sitting in vaults. Like the silver that I own, personally, is not going anywhere. So probably of that 2 billion ounces, there can't be, you know, more than a quarter of that is actually available for sale. And again, you look at the COMEX, where there's only, I think, 44 million ounces in the registered category, which is, you know, worth less than $1 billion. There's just not that much out there. So from both a supply standpoint and a demand standpoint, remember, even in this year where they've smashed prices down, we have already surpassed 2011's record Silver Eagle purchases from the U.S. Mint. India, despite all of their tariffs, they already have record silver demand. So very tight on both sides. I mean, at some point, something has to give with all the money printing out there.
I think a big component of the Indian silver story is obviously the levies placed on gold to try to support the rupee currency in that nation. But either way, silver, a perennial favorite of that subcontinent. Of course, China just surpassed India as the world's largest consumer of gold. You know, gold, the only form of money that has held up for, well, you could argue 5,000-6,000 years of monetary history, simply has never imploded as a currency. But for some reason, we always seem to forget this and shift back to a fiat. I'd like your comments on whether or not you expect that history to repeat itself again here in the U.S.
Well, it has to. Again, you know, when you talk about money per se, people throw around the term money loosely when the dollar is actually just currency. If you want to look at what the definition of money is, it can't just be a medium of exchange. It also has to be a store of value. It has to be scarce. It has to be verifiable. That is, you know how much is out there and how much is being printed. So really, on none of those, and of course it has to be fungible, and on none of those levels, does the dollar or the euro make the definition of as far as the dollar's medium of exchange? Really, only in the United States can you use a dollar. And now that they have 20 different forms of $100 bills, they're barely even fungible anymore because no one trusts them. I mean, you go around the world, and the dollar, the $100 bill is the most counterfeited bill in the world. So, when it comes to money, the dollar is even less money than it's ever been before. And that's why people are looking at things like Bitcoin and, of course, gold and silver. The difference being between those two, that Bitcoin does not have futures exchanges that you can naked short them, whereas gold and silver do.
You know, Bitcoin, quite a phenomenon. We first brought it to the attention of our listeners at around, I want to say, $40. A lot of emails, especially since we crossed $600, up $100 in just a day, up 50% in just 1 week on Bitcoins, moving from 400 to 600 last week. A lot of emails from people, and I try to steer them back to precious metals. Most of these messages ask, can you please simply tell us what it is in one or two sentences. And I just try to point out, look, a Bitcoin is simply something that requires a computer considerable time and resources to find. That's one of the things that makes it valuable. The other, it's scarcity. And then the other thing that makes it valuable is currently it's not really controlled or restricted by government, although that's changing almost weekly now. Those two characteristics make it desirable. If Bitcoins can soar from $4 to $400, $500, $600 in a year, imagine what gold and silver can do when people start to wake up and realize their currency is little more than thin air.
I've done as much as I can, as much research as possible. I've written two pieces about them. In fact, I actually did an interview 6 hours before the first big crash in April, and I said, it feels like the internet right here because everyone's emailing me. Whereas when I did my piece 2 weeks ago and it was 270, I said, it does not feel like the internet because no one's talking about it. Of course, that has changed in the ensuing 2 weeks. In fact, we hit $1,000 briefly last night per Bitcoin, which means one of these digital things, you know, yes, they have a cost of production, but not that much, was almost worth what an ounce of gold is, which is just shows you, look, to me, this is an investment. Maybe one day it'll be considered money, but as I said with the definition, right now it's just an intriguing technology, and people are speculating on it because they're talking about all the demand in China. Hey, look, gold demand in China is going to double this year from last year's record levels, but again, as you said, there's no one controlling it right now. There's no one managing it, and certainly there's no mechanism to make it short it. So right now, it seems like this very interesting, quote, investment, but I would bet that 90% of the people that are buying it have no idea how it works. And, you know, to this day, I still am not quite sure about it, although I will certainly read more.
Take a look at what people are really saying. When they buy a Bitcoin, when they buy some of the alternatives to Bitcoin, they're saying, look, we want an alternative to our currency, to worthless money. We want an alternative that is essentially untrackable and holds its purchasing power. And you are right. I mean, this is obviously a fad, and there are some frothy aspects to it. And I certainly don't encourage people to go buy Bitcoins at these levels. But what's going to happen when the power goes out? If the lights go out, the computers turn off, the government decides to regulate Bitcoins, what happens to your investment, okay? Conversely, look at gold and silver. The lights go off, the power goes off. I can't think of anything much more valuable. There's a government shutdown. There is civil disobedience, unrest. Government profligacy continues at this rapid pace. The Fed adds another $1 trillion, maybe $2 trillion next year under Dr. Yellen's leadership. Who knows what's going to happen to the Fed's balance sheet in the coming years? Add that all up. I would much rather have a bag of even silver dimes or quarters than a few digital Bitcoins. That I challenge you to walk to the grocery store, drive to the grocery store, and purchase a bag of groceries with some Bitcoins.
The Fed has created, in our just this generation, they've created numerous bubbles, one worse than the last. You can go back to, of course, the internet bubble and then the real estate bubble, which had the crash in 2008. And now what we have now, which is not only treasuries, but basically all financial instruments. And so it's created this this moral hazard of the Bernanke put, where any financial asset is bought, and that's, you know, Bitcoin is being embraced because it's yes, it's an alternative currency like gold, but at the same time, to me, it's more an investment than anything else right now. And as you said, there's plenty of flaws in it. It does not meet the definition of money, certainly not right now. And in the worst case scenario, 6,000 years of history is not going to be changed. But the thing that really gets me irritated the most is when people make it seem like, well, we don't get it. Like the world is changing so fast technologically that, I mean, you not understand Bitcoins. It's how the world is. Look, back in 1999, they said that about internet companies, and they've said that about countless things over the years. The fact is, there's only a handful of things that have lasted the test of time. And in the monetary realm, only gold and silver have done so. And I can almost assure you when the next crisis occurs, it's not going to be Bitcoin that the whole world is.
Let's take a look at the U.S. Constitution. You know, as I'm sure you know, it specifies as gold and silver coin are the only legal tender. The Coinage Act, I believe it was 1790-1792, declared that the U.S. dollar must be 371 grains, pure silver. It mentions very little about gold. You know, digital currencies are not money. Neither are worthless greenbacks, which were, remember, pulled out of circulation following the Civil War and somehow found their way back into circulation. The legal currency is primarily silver. In fact, that's the very definition of a dollar or taler, which it was originally based on.
I mean, to me, the biggest thing that's going on, well, it's two things. One, it's this this financial asset blow-up that the Fed has caused, and obviously the the PPT and other aspects of the government are supporting this. They actually did lie about the unemployment report back in October 2012. Everyone knew that. But aside from that, just the disconnect between the real economy and this so-called recovery is never been more wide. I mean, company after company is warning of the worst retail holiday season since the bottom in 2008-2009. This has been the worst earnings seasons for pre-announcements in history, and outside the banking sector, earnings growth has been zero. And of course, the markets have gone up due to unprecedented increases in PE multiples. This is the final stages of a blow off in financial assets caused by the Fed. And at some point, the reality is going to set in, either because the markets crash back to earth or because they start to lose all their gains to inflation and they become nominal instead of real gains.
We talked about the Fed pumping an inordinate amount of money and liquidity into the system. And then, of course, we have large corporations simply cutting back on their workforce. And this works well in the short term. You know, you cut back, you make your company lean and mean, but eventually you pay for that over time as you lose a lot of the intellectual capital of your firm and the nation. As you say, the disparity between the haves and have-nots is really a frightening number, according to some metrics, approaching 100 million able-bodied folks out of work if you include all of the metrics going back to the 1980s. You look at John Williams' shadow stats numbers, we're approaching a 25% unemployment rate if you use the original metric. So, I mean, there are some huge systemic issues that we're facing, and eventually, if we start to see those equities roll over, there's going to be huge money flows out of stocks and bonds somewhere. I can't see that going into real estate for the most part. That leaves the commodities and, more importantly, precious metals. Any thoughts?
I don't say per se that they're going to crash, because I see the money printing behind it that's only going to accelerate. If you look at Zimbabwe, if you look at Weimar Germany, if you look at any of the 27 hyperinflations of the 20th century, it's always the same. The stock markets start out making the big gains in real terms as a safe haven, and ultimately the stock markets are big losers in real terms because inflation overtakes them. That happens all the time. If I had to guess what's going to ultimately happen, I would bet that the stock markets go a lot higher. But in time, the cost of living goes even higher than that, as will the price of gold and silver. Now, look, anything could happen, but we're past the point of no return with the money printing. The Ponzi scheme that it is, it has to grow larger. So we're going to see at some point QE 5, 6, 7, until eventually the system falls upon itself. And, you know, will stocks fall in real terms or will they simply fall? I'm not sure, but either way, gold and silver are going to outperform both in both cases.
You know, keeping with that Weimar analogy, I think it's apropos, because if we look at the correlation matrices, generally speaking, gold tends to underperform when stocks and equities do well and vice versa. But if we look at the Weimar example, you reach this new threshold, if you will. We might be actually entering such a scenario now where gold and the Dow reach a one-to-one ratio at much, much higher prices. And of course, that would be music to the ears of precious metals investors.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to guess, I would say that's more likely given the scenario that's going on right now. But again, it really, I'm not concerned so much about the Dow. As you said, it's clearly no longer an indication of the economy. It's so manipulated by the POMO, that is the Permanent Open Market Operations, and the Working Group on Capital Markets. A lot of these terms that we've heard before no longer mean anything. Even a bull market, can anyone truly say gold's in a bear market when we're going to have record physical demand this year and the plummeting physical inventories? I mean, can anyone truly say the U.S. is in recovery just because the government posts a 2% GDP for a couple of quarters in a row when clearly the real data says otherwise. None of these things matter anymore. What matters is that you see what's really going on in the world and that you are protected from the most likely scenarios, which are going to be real losses in assets other than things like gold and silver.
Well, not to mention, I think it's such a wonderful shield against declining purchasing power as a long-term investor, or you can think about the dislocation that comes from sudden economic collapse, as once again, alluding back to Weimar or any of the other collapses we saw, Argentina, Venezuela, and several others more recently. You can wake up and find out that an MF Global scenario has come to pass, a Cyprus situation, more recently as occurred in Poland, where essentially half of pension funds evaporate with no remediation. These are all possible situations that every investor has to start preparing for, I think now, with all of this talk of bail-ins and the legislation that is slowly, covertly finding its way into our institutions as well as our government. So, Andy, as we wrap up here, any other issues that you'd like to share with folks?
You know, you mentioned Venezuela. That's been the poster child of exactly what I'm talking about. They are experiencing the early stages of hyperinflation as we speak. That, you know, their CPI is up 50% this year, and you know it's more than that. Their stock market is up 500% at the same time. This is exactly what I'm talking about. Especially when you have the government supporting stocks as well, it becomes this frenzy where people don't realize, and I truly believe that the money printing must keep going. And, you know, Janet Yellen said it last week, I'm going to keep doing it indefinitely. The can gets kicked, has to end, and with the debts going up parabolically, and, you know, you saw the massive inflation that was exported around the world this year. The average currency is down 30% against the dollar over the last 2 years, particularly in these fragile five nations like India and Indonesia. I mean, something is going to give because the money printing that comes out of the States and gets exported everywhere is not going to stop.
As we wrap up here, I wonder if you could tell folks more about Miles Franklin, as well as any other contact information that you have, please.
Sure. Miles Franklin, we've been a bullion dealer for 24 years. You can contact us at 800-822-8080. I also write a free blog every day. In fact, three of us do at milesfranklin.com. And you can contact me at ahoffman@milesfranklin.com.
Very good. All right, Andy Hoffman, we want to thank you for your time today.
It was a pleasure, Chris. Thank you.